Good morning. Well, you know, sometimes when you go from point A to point B, you got to go through C and D to get there. So when I originally was asked to do this service, you know, they want you to put a news blurb in the bulletin or in the newsletter. And I wrote, "Journeys begin with certain expectations. Over time, finding ourselves at various crossroads along the way, wondering if we will make it, desiring to lay down our burdens early. Upon arrival, hopes and dreams are found faulty to the revealed reality of the destination. What does it mean? And from where do we move on to? Is tomorrow truly another day? And if it is it really worth it? Yes, the joy and positive message of Battlestar Galactica." Well, it was a little too wordy to put in the newsletter, but I figured it's a good point to start off with this morning. Now, typically, my mornings start with getting the Idaho Statesman, and I pop open the Life section and check out the comics and inevitably take a look at my horoscope to see maybe if it has a hint as to how the day is going to go. And today's read, "You could get ahead of yourself in the wanting department. Think about what you already have." I am not a priest. I've never been a particularly good man. I am, in fact, a profoundly selfish man. But that doesn't matter, you see. Something in the universe loves me. Something in the universe loves the entity that is me. I choose to call this something God. A singular spark that dwells in the soul of every living being. If you look inside yourself, you will find that spark too. You will, but you will have to look deep. Love your faults. Embrace them. If God embraces them, how can they be faults? Love yourself. You have to love yourself. If we don't love ourselves, how can we love others? And when we know what we are, then we can find the truth out about others. Seek what they are. Seek the truth about them. And you will know what the truth is. The truth about them. About you. About me. Do you? The truth is, we are all perfect, just as we are. God only loves that which is perfect, and He loves you. He loves you because you are perfect. You are perfect just the way you are. Interesting. Yes? Now. No. What you are doing, darling, is boring me with your superstitious drivel, your metaphysical nonsense, which, to be fair to you, actually appeals to half educated dullards that make up most of human society, but which, I hasten to add, no rational, intelligent, free-thinking human being truly believes. Which leads me to the inescapable conclusion that Cylons are, in the final, analysis, little more than toasters with great-looking legs. Now, those two dialogues come from the same person. The second came first. The first came second. Now, Gaius Baltar is an interesting character. Take, well, I don't know, Bill Gates and Bon Jovi. Meld them together. You get the picture. I can tell by the reactions. Super brain, Nobel Prize winner, who's a babe magnet. Well, that babe magnet helped the Cylons destroy the 12 colonies of Kobol. At the beginning of the series, he is a self-professing atheist, mocking both the polytheistic faith of the humans and the monotheistic faith of the Cylons. However, over the course of the series, events have convinced him, to some degree, and with Baltar, you'd never really know where he stands, that no matter how contrary to his scientific beliefs, there might actually be one true God. And Gaius is not alone, though. The faith and the beliefs of many, you know, of the characters within the series, if not all of them, are challenged on their journey. Sometime in the not-too-distant past, while watching another television program, and yes, I do watch something other than Battlestar Galactica, my wife commented or asked how or why a certain character managed to do what they had just done. Being the occasional smartass that I am, I responded, because the writers wanted it that way. Now, that said, I do believe, though, that when the writing is good and the writers understand and respect the nature and integrity of the characters for whom they are writing to, that this is indeed an oversimplification. Reality, even when it's fictionalized, is beyond our control, and it simply goes the way that it goes. Like life, that ultimate reality. Now, journeys and transformations are metaphorical to life, because life is metaphorical in return. Each Sunday, we gather here in religious community, our spiritual home. While home has a connotation of somewhere being solid, we indeed are literally the church of the journey, the church of the transition. Each Sunday, we welcome new and old, young and old. There are many paths to the holy. Whatever path you are on or choosing, we welcome you. From before we are us, the sperm headed one way, the egg headed the other, once joined, eventually delivered into the world, we are in motion, and it seems on a constant journey until the last breath leaves our lips. I forget where I heard this analogy, but it's like we're some particle traveling through the spectrum of energy, and for a brief moment of our lives, here we are, visible, corporeal. Now, the first journey I have any direct notion of was at age 4. My father had left me in the family station wagon, parked at the top of a small hill that led in to the garage at our home. Now, to be quite honest with you, I do not remember this per se firsthand, but I've been told about it many times and many times and many times over the years. Well, some way, somehow, I managed to put the car in reverse, and yes, it was still running. The car traveled then down the hill and into a hedge of rose bushes. But the journey didn't end there. At least, it ended for the car. It didn't end for me. Faster than a speeding bullet, I crossed our front yard and then the field of clover after that to my grandparents' home. My grandma and Grandpa Heese were often my refuge, where I could most certainly find safe haven, more often than not. However, as we grow into adulthood, certainty and expectations drift away. Where do you find your safe haven now? In my last sermon, we left the Battlestar Galactica and the ragtag fleet of what remained of humanity just starting their journey to find a new home, a land of milk and honey called Earth. In 4 remarkable seasons of storytelling, that journey is coming to a close very soon. 4 episodes remain. Now, in the words of Ron Moore, the show's revitalizing creator, the story has a beginning, a middle, and an end, and the end is indeed near. Though I find this odd, given one of the mantras within the show and the opening music, the words, which I think are in Latin, are "all of this has happened before, and all of it will happen again." Now, this is the really hard part, because I really do love the story, and out of the respect of the efforts of those that have made it, what can I really tell you and not spoil it? You really need to watch it and experience it for yourself. Trust me, you will not be disappointed. So with that in mind, I've chosen to ruin the most obvious of story points. They find Earth. Now, I do this also because, having seen it a number of times, knowing the outcome doesn't diminish the effect of what happens. Upon confirming their position in orbit of Earth, Admiral Adama makes an announcement to the fleet. "Crew of Galactica, people of the fleet, this is Admiral Adama. 3 years ago, I promised to lead you to a new home. We've endured a difficult journey. We've all lost. We've all suffered. And the truth is, I questioned whether this day would ever come. But today our journey is at an end. We have arrived at Earth." And upon setting the mic down, celebrations break out all over the fleet. Now, the special effects are wonderfully executed. The majestic but battle-worn Battlestar Galactica and the fleet in orbit drifting over the Earth, gliding along, and suddenly smaller ships are seen descending towards the surface. Then you're with the ships, flying in concert with them through the clouds, dropping, racing to the surface, like children running for home. And then we transition to another shot. It's Admiral Adama's hand grasping into the soil. And in the audio background, you can hear the clicking and the clacking. And as the camera peers out, the clicking and the clacking's coming from a Geiger counter. And then the shot continues to widen. Admiral Adama, President Roslin, and others looking out over a desolate nuclear wasteland, the dream of Earth, of their new home, is no more. The shot pans across Roslin as she, alone, speaks the word questioningly. Earth. Only to be answered by the hollow echoes of the wind and the crashing waves on a not too distant shore. In the following episode, she reflects on the situation. It's perfect. We've traded one nuked civilization for another. By the end of the episode, Adama announces to the fleet that Earth is no longer a viable option. But if it's the last thing he does, if it's the last thing he does, he will find them a new home. Now, we as the viewer know at that point there's only 9 episodes left. And with that said, lots and lots of additional sermon material left to cover. Now, I don't think it's too much of a stretch to say that we've all had moments in our lives like this where expectations, especially after much effort of trial and tribulation and of journey, were blown away. Now, for myself, a little more than 7 years ago, while standing at home in my shower one morning trying to figure out where my life had gone so terribly wrong, I made the decision to return to school, college or university, to get a degree, to take and to have more control over my life, to write my own destiny. While not faced with nuclear destruction, a very large part of my world ended to where I had only my family and a few prized possessions. Well, this past December I graduated. And I graduated into a seemingly nuked economic disaster. What to do? What to do? Well, I am by no means alone in this. Now, looking back to the start of the story, of Battlestar Galactica. The very first spoken words in the series are by a Cylon 6 to a colonial officer. Are you alive? Now, we had the words spoken for the contemplation from Natalie about the significance of each moment. And our own Reverend Forrest Church has spoken and written many times about living a life worth dying for. Are you living your life worth dying for? Are we? It's not necessarily a question you need to answer right now, but it's something to give pause to, something to give serious thought. Is there real meaning to what we're living our lives for? Now, I'd like to close with the words of the great musician Bob Dylan. "There must be some way out of here," said the Joker to the thief. "There's too much confusion. I can't get no relief. Businessmen, they drink my wine, and plowmen dig my earth. None of them along the line know what any of it's worth. But no reason to get excited," the thief, he kindly spoke. "There are many here among us who feel that life is but a joke. But you and I, well, we've been through that. And this is not our fate. So let us not talk falsely now. The hour is getting late." Well, my friends, the last breath has yet to pass my lips. Admittedly, I'm down. I really am. But I can't help myself but to think that tomorrow will be a better day. And I, for one, big surprise, will not go quietly into that good night. Now, I don't know about the raging part. I'm not a big rager, but certainly not quietly. If we try to make it so, I live, we live, and while we live, let us set course for that next point of the journey. Together or apart, whatever path you are choosing. So say we all.